Word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Let's turn now to America's biggest export, trash. You may have heard that Americans throw away more than any other nation, but any idea of just how much? Well, each of us is on track to toss 102 tons of garbage in our lifetime, more than 7 pounds a day and twice what we chucked out in 1960. Pulitzer Prize winner Edward Humes believes we are living in a state of garbage denial, delusion even. His new book, Garbology, Our Dirty Love Affair with Trash, looks at the science, politics, and economics of waste. Ed, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
102 tons of garbage in a lifetime. Staggering in a kind of abstract way, but most of us really don't see our personal waste. You know, maybe except on that reality TV show about hoarders. So it's kind of an invisible problem.
Yeah, I'm actually though the hoarders are great signals for us all, because our tendency is to view people who accumulate large amounts of trash in their homes as aberrant, but the amount of material they're holding on to is perfectly normal. That's what we all do, except we have this really good trick of rolling it to the curb and making it seem as if it disappears. But of course, we're building virtual geologic features out of trash, given the quantity that we make. And we're really good at hiding this epic amount of waste from ourselves.
In fact, 12,000 tons a day trucked to landfills. What are some of the consequences of
all
this waste?
That's just New York City, by the way.
Oh, New York City, right. Which spends, what, $2.2 billion a year on waste removal. What are some of the consequences of all this waste?
Well, it's the cost is certainly a big part. And most, if you look at the average community in America, we spend more on waste management than on fire protection, parks and recreation, school textbooks. It's a big cost just managing it, and we're really bad at that. When you mentioned that figure, 102 tons. That's something I discovered halfway through the book. My original working title was 64 tons,
huh.
And I found out the official data, this trash Bible that the EPA puts out every year, is just woefully wrong. That we are much worse off than most of us have been told, and even the good stuff has been exaggerated. The amount of recycling, it turns out, is much more anemic than the figures we've been given. We only manage to recycle about under 25% of our trash, and that's a landmark we were supposed to have passed over 10 years ago via the official figures, but it turns out the real-world data is much more alarming.
Well, some of your discoveries are really alarming. I can't tell you how many times I wrote, whoa, in my notes, you know, while reading, including you have an American waste sampler. Here are some numbers. Annually, Americans throw away enough aluminum to rebuild the entire air fleet, enough steel to level and restore Manhattan, enough plastic to shrink wrap Texas. Unbelievable.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, well, and the amount of, here's another one, good one I like, the amount of plastic that finds its way into the ocean, and plastic waste, that is the equivalent of 40 super aircraft carriers, the biggest ships in the world, every year,
right.
in terms of weight. It's like losing 40 huge aircraft carriers at sea every year.
Well,
and that's
so,
just the stuff we lost track of.
Exactly. You know, so this makes it now the U.S.'s largest export product. Now, you met a Chinese businesswoman, in fact, the first female Chinese billionaire, who's made a lot of money recycling American trash. So rather than just throwing it away, tell us a little bit about her and her business.
Well, it's an amazing story. The queen of trash, Zhang Ying, she, as you say, was the first billionaire in China, and I think is now the fourth richest woman in China. But she started out in the Los Angeles area scavenging with her husband paper from landfills that was not going to be recycled. It was just going to get landfilled, as most of our paper to this day still is. And the business that she started in the 90s grew over time. She was able to export her scrap to China, which was ramping up its manufacturing base to make products for us and needed paper, needed to make cardboard boxes. And over time, her company in the U.S. became our largest exporter in terms of cargo containers. I think it was last year or the year before, 300,000 cargo containers of our garbage, the biggest thing we export, going to China. They make products of it, send it back to us, you know, paying pennies and making dollars and shipping this stuff all over the world. Meanwhile, we're cast in the role of China's trash compactor.
So somebody's
our new economy.
Yeah, I remember just hearing last week about, you know, exports are up, and this makes me scratch my head and think twice about it. But someone is making a lot of money off of, you know, our waste and waste management. In fact, the company Waste Management, which is now buying up small companies experimenting with how to extract materials from garbage. Tell us, is this a hopeful sign, Ed?
Well, what it represents is a recognition that those hoarders were onto something, that this stuff really is a treasure. You know, we think we've made waste, the word waste, into a synonym for trash. And you forget that the operative word in waste is it's the manifestation of wastefulness. You know, we're not throwing away worthless stuff. We're wasting stuff that's worth a lot. And Bill Steiner, the CEO of Waste Management, says, look, every year I'm burying materials in my landfills that if I could find a way to recapture it, are worth $10 billion just for what the landfills he controls. So there is a recognition that we are squandering important and valuable resources at a time when we really are less and less able to afford that kind of lack of frugality, if you will. So, yes, I think it's a positive sign.
We're talking trash with Ed Humes. His new book, Garbology, traces attitudes about garbage from ancient Greece to planned obsolescence to the ecology movement of the 70s to today's swelling, toxic landfills. Well, some of the epic battles for increased efficiency and waste-to-energy products that could be alternatives to landfills have met obstacles. You write extensively about the case in L.A. County, the sanitation department that really did try to initiate waste-to-energy, but it failed.
Yeah, and there's a lot of reasons for that, but what was proposed was a really massive plant that would burn trash in Los Angeles up to 10,000 tons a day and turned it into energy, into electricity. And the neighborhoods around the site, which was a landfill site, a very small one at the time, opposed it. They thought, oh, we're going to have this 200-foot-tall smokestack, and we're afraid it's going to affect the property values. And so the opposition was so great and the political cost so great to supporting this project that it was scotched. And instead, the nation's largest landfill took form there, the Puente Hills landfill. I call it Garbage Mountain. So they traded the 200-foot smokestack for a 500-foot mountain of trash that now dominates the landscape and is being used to generate power, ironically, because it gives us so much methane, such a potent greenhouse gas emanating from the rotting garbage in the landfill, that they try and capture some of it and generate electricity with it that way. And it still produces enough for 70,000 homes. It's a tremendous pile of trash, basically.
And but there's also some innovative projects going on about, you know, trying to change the way we deal with trash. In fact, you trace Trash Tracker. This is a GPS device placed by citizens in typical items that follows where the trash ended up, revealing many things, including some chronic inefficiencies in waste disposal. Can you highlight some of those for us?
Yeah, you know, it's really disheartening. You think, oh, well, at least if we're throwing things in the recycling bin, it's going to be taken care of and we're improving the planet. And then the trash trackers say, yeah, but we're really bad at figuring out where to send this stuff. And they attach these little electronic trackers, the innards of a cell phone, to select pieces of trash. And there was a printer cartridge, you know, for a computer printer that was placed in a recycling place, and it actually traversed the country twice back and forth before it finally found a place where it could be properly recycled. And what that means is all the energy savings and the material savings that recycling is supposed to bring us were wiped away by now the enormous carbon footprint that this little cartridge collected as it traversed the country. And unfortunately, that's not that uncommon, that things take a very roundabout way before they land where they're supposed to land in our waste management system. There's a lot of chaos in there.
But once they do land, there's the garbage project. This is a kind of anthropological, archaeological approach to understanding human behavior through what they throw away. So what were some of the revelations for this project?
Oh, well, you know, archaeologists have always loved ancient trash because, you know, it never lies. It's not like the official histories where, you know, the winners and tell the story and the losers get shut up. The trash tells the truth. And the garbologists, contemporary archaeologists of our trash. And the first thing they find out is that people are woefully ignorant about what their trash really looks like. You know, they would vastly underestimate the amount of alcohol they drank, which could be counted quite accurately by the old beer cans and bottles. And they vastly overestimate the amount of healthy food they eat. You know, it's like many more boxes of chocolate brownie mix and far less, healthy granola boxes than people would say in polls. Oddly, though, they were very accurate in what they observed about their neighbors in terms of how much boozing
uh-huh.
and how healthy were they.
That's interesting.
So there's a lot of psychology behind our trash. And one of the other things that these landfill miners learned was that things didn't decompose as quickly as we thought. And they drill down and find, Eisenhower wins, newspapers and hot dogs that still were recognizable. And, you know, the man who sort of invented this science, Bill Rathje, pulled out this bowl, this plastic bowl that had something brown on it, and he wiped away that top level of it, this pulpy mass, and it was bright green. And he said, "My God, it's guacamole, and it's still green."
No.
So the landfills weren't doing what we thought they were doing. They weren't breaking things down. They were just mummifying a lot of stuff.
And he identified that, you know, we really have a trash delusion here in New Hampshire. And you talked to this artist, Bea Johnson. She's in Marin County. She and her family are on a mission to reduce their waste. What are some of the ways they're doing it?
Well, Bea and her family are great because they're showing us the way back, that we are not consigned to this immense level of waste, and that there's ways to bring it down that make sense and aren't, you know, denying ourselves the things we really want in life. But she and her family are very much into refusing things that are disposable in nature. You know, when they go out and buy and shop, they're thinking, well, are we going to want this as an heirloom and keep it as long as we can? And is it going to have a long and useful life, or is it going to be in the trash in 6 months or a year or less? And if the answer is it's the latter, they just don't buy it, you know, because if it's going to be trash soon enough, well, maybe you don't need it at all.
Well,
and they also, you know, do a lot of recycling. They buy in bulk. They bring their own containers to the markets and then reuse them. And it may sound arduous. She swears she has more leisure time than ever, mostly because she doesn't do a lot of impulse shopping anymore. And they save a lot of money. 40% of their household budget went away, and now they go on more vacations, and they have a college fund. And, a lot of people are looking at that and saying, I could use that extra 40%.
Well, Ed, before we wrap, I mean, that's one family, right? Bea Johnson and her family. But we are all up against a barrage of packaging, of fast food, of plastic bags and bottles, and municipalities who don't have the upfront cash to make any changes. What's going to make the case to change? I mean, why can't we be more like Denmark? Doesn't really fly in many ideological circles.
Well, you know, it's amazing that the Japanese can get by on making 2.5 pounds of trash a piece a day, and the Danes can do 4 pounds. They're not. It's not like they live in impoverished states of denial, and these are robust economies with high standards of living. They seem to realize a little better than we do that ultimately wasting things is a bad economic strategy. It's bad environmental policy, and it's bad for business. You know, why do you think companies like Walmart want to shave their waste profile? Because it makes them more money. And so making careful selections as consumers and trying to be a little less wasteful in our personal habits actually brings us a bang for the buck in addition to having a more benign impact on the environment.
Well, Ed, I want to thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Ed Humes received the Pulitzer Prize for his newspaper coverage of the military. We previously did speak to him about that Walmart book. His new book is called Garbology, Our Dirty Love Affair with Trash. And we do have a link to more on the book and to Bea Johnson's Zero Waste Family blog. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. We're proud to say that NHPR does have a green team, a collection of staff dedicated to make the station more sustainable, less trashy. Anyone found carrying styrofoam goes straight to the detention center and is forced to listen to an endless loop of commercials. We'd love to hear your ideas for cutting down on waste. You can post them on Facebook or send us a tweet at Word of Mouth. Now coming up, what gets thrown out because of mistakes in police work? Cops and prosecutors reassess the way investigations are typically done when Word of Mouth returns in just a moment.